XTOX is the industry leader in connecting life science, food, healthcare, and medical device professionals. The XTOX Life Science Podcast features insightful conversations with industry experts about all things pharma, biotech, and more.
Hello and welcome to the XTOX Life Science Podcast. I'm Aisha Rashid, Senior Life Science Journalist at XTOX.com, and this week I'm delighted to introduce a special guest on the show. We have with us today Robert Barrow, who is the CEO and Board Director at MindMed, a clinical stage biopharmaceutical company which is developing novel product candidates to treat brain health disorders. The company is developing innovative psychedelic-based product candidates with and without acute perceptual effects, targeting neurotransmitter pathways that play key roles in brain health disorders. Rob is an accomplished pharmaceutical executive and clinical pharmacologist with over a decade of experience leading drug development programs in a variety of disease areas. After joining MindMed as Chief Development Officer in January 2021, he was named CEO in June 2021. Rob holds a master's degree in pharmacology from The Ohio State University and a Bachelor of Science degree from Wake Forest University, where he graduated summa cum laude and is a CFA charter holder. Last month, MindMed received FDA Breakthrough Therapy designation for its MM120 program for the treatment of generalized anxiety disorder. MindMed also announced that its phase 2B study of MM120 in generalized anxiety disorder met its key secondary endpoint, and 12-week top-line data demonstrated clinically and statistically significant durability of activity. So to learn more about MindMed and the latest on its developmental pipeline, let's turn to Rob. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So I'd like to start off by asking you about MindMed and really what the core mission and goals of the company are and how you're leading the company as CEO.
Absolutely. We're unfortunately in a time where there's a mental health epidemic around the world, but particularly here in the United States. And it's emblematic that there have been very few advances over the last several decades, particularly in diseases like generalized anxiety disorder. Fortunately, there's been a renaissance of research in the drug class we know as psychedelics, and MindMed has been fortunate to be a leader in this field over the past several years, and really what is a paradigm-shifting approach to treating mental health disorders and to bring in new treatment options available to these patients who have millions, tens of millions of patients here in the U.S. who are suffering from anxiety and depression, and really a new hope that we can have a significant positive impact on those patients and those disorders. We've been through a significant evolution at MindMed over the past several years, going from really in its founding and inception in 2019 through a pretty much complete top-to-bottom evolution of the organization since I joined in the beginning of 2021, and culminating with a great start to the year here with the receipt of a breakthrough therapy designation and really a remarkable phase 2 results we saw from our trial in MM120 or LSD in generalized anxiety disorder.
Absolutely. And congratulations on that FDA breakthrough therapy designation. And we'll get more into that for sure, as I really would love to hear more about the trial results and all of the steps that went into and the steps towards getting that breakthrough designation. But before that, I'd like to ask, currently, what are the unmet needs for conditions like generalized anxiety disorder? You did mention that there is an epidemic of brain health and mental disorders, And so what are the unmet needs that need to be addressed, in your opinion?
So unfortunately, over the past two decades, the last approved therapy in generalized anxiety disorder was in 2007, with the approval of Cymbalta for GAD, and prior to that, in 2004, its initial approval in depression. And since that time, there have been no new treatment options in anxiety, but the prevalence of anxiety disorders has gone up to about 10%. It is, you know, a remarkable increase over the past two decades in anxiety. And our team has just presented data in the last couple of weeks to show that even since the pandemic, the prevalence of anxiety disorders, anxiety symptoms has grown by 40% or more. And so we see this long-term trend where there's a worsening of these conditions, but also even more acutely over the past several years. And generalized anxiety disorder is a disorder that is widely impactful in every aspect of patients' lives, both in terms of just the anxiety symptoms, but it also carries over and represents a high degree of comorbidity with other mental health disorders like depression, but also physiological disorders. And patients who often go and visit the doctor and utilize healthcare resources much more frequently, who miss a lot more work and are less effective at work when they are present. And so this is a highly impactful disorder, and one that, because it's so difficult to treat, it's one that's been overlooked for many years. And we felt particularly confident that this molecule, LSD, which has been around for about 100 years and is the most potent molecule in the entire drug class, would have a really great opportunity to treat these symptoms that are often intractable and not well controlled by the current standards of care, which are SRIs and benzodiazepines. And so our approach has been to try to push the bounds of what's possible in treating things like anxiety disorders. And given the large unmet need, we're particularly excited about the data we were able to achieve.
And could you tell us a bit more about the FDA breakthrough therapy designation for your lead product candidate, MM120, and the path to receiving that?
Absolutely. We're really very grateful. We see FDA and the Division of Psychiatry as partners in the development. They've been extraordinarily engaged on all aspects of the development of this drug class, as represented by putting out draft guidance in 2023, something that's quite unique for particular drug class to get that kind of attention from the agency. So very, very encouraged. I've been fortunate now to be part of both this breakthrough program and previously breakthrough therapy designation program with psilocybin to treat major depressive disorder. We've always had constructive dialogue, but the breakthrough therapy designation really takes that to an even further level and gives us a higher degree of clarity and more proactive engagement across the board with the agency to make sure that we're being as efficient and as effective as possible in our development program.
And you mentioned that the FDA did indeed issue, you know, for the first time ever, something of its kind in June 2023, its first draft psychedelics guidance for industry. And so, as you said, it reflects a significant change and shift in the developmental and regulatory landscape for psychedelic-based compounds. And so how did that draft guidance specifically assist your application and work for MM120?
So the what showed up in the draft guidance is largely consistent with what we've heard from the agency over the past number of years. And really our development program, there's been this constructive dialogue. I think there's been a recognition across the board from both academic researchers, from regulators, and from industry that, you know, we're trying to develop this incredibly promising class of drugs using research methodologies and approaches that aren't typically, you know, equipped to approach treatment such as this, where we have a single administration that has this long, durable effect after that acute treatment. And so the FDA's guidance was particularly clarifying, I think, for any outside audiences and for anyone who is getting into the field and any organizations that are trying to develop this drug class. It's certainly clarifying. It draws, you know, a clear sort of line around what expectations are for the drug class, and in many ways serves to provide that greater degree of transparency and clarity for what the agency is ultimately expecting. But fortunately, we've had consistent feedback from the agency since the inception of our development program back in 2020 and in 2021. And as a result, our phase two trial and certainly our trials going forward are fully in line with FDA's guidance. And on many aspects, we believe some of the most closely aligned of any of the studies conducted to date, such as the way we assessed really robustly the dose response of our molecule, and also had a true placebo control, which is the first time in a study of this size we've seen that kind of methodology and exploration of those two particular variables.
And can you tell us more about the 12-week durability data for MM120 that MindMed recently shared?
Absolutely. So this was a 12-week study, as you mentioned. where patients were brought in with generalized anxiety disorder, and they had to have a Hamilton anxiety score of greater than or equal to 20, which is right in the middle of the moderate severity category. But because, and this is representative of the population, because of the severity and the lack of treatments in GAD, we actually saw that on average patients came in with an average Hamilton anxiety scale score of 30, which is quite severe. Over the course of 12 weeks, we followed patients. They were brought in and underwent a single treatment session where they're kept under observation by healthcare practitioners in line with FDA's guidance. We saw a rapid response where patients within 24 hours on scales that can measure a change that fast, such as the Clinical Global Impressions of a Severity scale, we saw a dramatic and statistically significant reduction within 24 hours. On the primary outcome measure, the Hamilton Anxiety Scale, we saw statistically and clinically significant reductions as early as could be measured at week one that continued through to the primary endpoint at week four and out even to week 12. And this is of a magnitude we've not ever seen before in studies of generalized anxiety disorder. So we started with a baseline HAM-A of 30, but on average at 12 weeks after that single treatment, a patient had a 21.9 unit reduction in HAM-A from baseline in the 100 microgram, the most effective dose group, which represented a 7.7 unit improvement over placebo. This is about double what we see from the standard of care today. I think as remarkably, or even perhaps even more remarkably, we saw that at 12 weeks, roughly 50% of patients were in clinical remission, meaning they had a HAM-A score of 7 or less. It means that they effectively don't have anxiety symptoms anymore. So to have it be the case that in our study, out of every two people who walked in the door and were treated, one of those two, 3 months later, no longer had anxiety symptoms is something that, you know, we try to be measured in our assessment of study results, but one can only help get excited when you see something that is that staggering in this durable clinical responses.
Indeed, very striking and very exciting. And so what are the real world implications for an LSD psychedelic based medicine to treat GAD and severe anxiety and based on the exciting data that you have? So we're finally seeing potentially a new treatment option, and which, again, is cause for a lot of excitement.
Absolutely. I want to be clear. These are phase two results. So we're starting our phase three program later this year, and we have to do two phase three studies to get confirmed, approved, and establishing confirm the clinical efficacy of molecule. And of course, the safety, which is critically important. We've seen such a legacy of promising data that we certainly feel quite confident as we go into our pivotal trials that there's a clear path from where we are today to ultimately a submission to FDA for this product in GAD. In terms of real world implications, you know, this would be the first new treatment option in 20 years. And it's a paradigm shift. I mean, we're talking about a treatment option where patients come in for a day of treatment, but have many months, at least what we've seen so far, many months of clinical response and reduction in anxiety symptoms. So we know that in the real world, there's a limitation capacity for psychiatrists, for mental health care in general, that there are long waiting lists that on average patients are waiting months or in some cases even years before they can access high quality psychiatric care. So the promise of having a drug where an acute intervention can have this durable of an impact and this high magnitude of an impact is something that we're incredibly excited to try to bring forward and that we think would you know, our aim is to ultimately sort of stem the tide of the mental health epidemic and this really unfortunate growth that has occurred over the past many, many years. We've seen signs of promise as well from an infrastructure and real world standpoint. J&J has a product, intranasal esketamine, Spravato, that is now in about 4,000 clinics around the country that's seen some really promising uptake. And so we want to leverage that even further. The dynamics of delivering our product MM120 compared to Spravato, we think are quite favorable where Spravato patients have to come in 56 times a year. And in our instance, we'll be talking you know, perhaps one, but likely just a few times over the course of a year or so. And so you know, we think that represents a huge upside in terms of the kind of durable response and the ease of administration and also the access and scalability. the ability to reach more patients and help more patients is really central to what we're about.
And speaking about this space, how is the landscape of psychedelic-based drug development evolving? I know that just maybe several years ago, of course, a decade ago, you wouldn't really hear too much about it in terms of being an actually feasible development kind of a program in many cases. But now the game's changed. And so what kind of a shift does... for example, like you meant, we talked about the FDA psychedelics guidance and just in general, the whole space of drug development in this area. How has it changed in your experience and where do you see it going in the future?
So, as you mentioned, 10 years ago, I think only a small handful of people most of them were probably working with MAPS or what's now Lykos Therapeutics. And they've been real pioneers for the broader field of studying these Schedule I controlled substances. But many people, I think, would have looked at the opportunity and said, well, this is, how could one conceive of developing a drug like LSD? And really with the renaissance of research and some of the academic researchers, our colleagues over in Switzerland who were pioneers in restarting research on LSD 5-6 years ago, they've really were the tip of the spear, and now we've been able to build on that and to put ourselves in a position where we've generated high quality data on a commercially viable, we think, drug product and going through the regulatory process. So there's been a huge evolution in the field. Of course, the biotech industry generally has been through a massive evolution over the past several years. There were the ups and the downs and the sideways, particularly as we went through some challenging or broader financial markets over the past couple of years that have hit biotech particularly hard. But we think that has been healthy. We sort of always approached it this way, that good science ultimately will prove itself out, and that we certainly believe we have an extremely rigorous approach to how we develop the drugs. And we're working on the drug that since the discovery of psychedelics has really been the most talked about and the most studied drug in the entire class. And so all of that has culminated in progress. And I think we've seen a further concentration. We've seen only a small group of companies now that are really getting funding and are able to navigate the process. And we're fortunate to have really important and strong backing from some of the leading biotech investors earlier this quarter as well, and a big equity financing we were able to undertake. So there's been a concentration and a small leadership pack that has emerged, and we're very feel privileged to be at the front of that leadership pack currently.
And what sorts of challenges are perhaps unique? Obviously, there would be around the development of psychedelic-based medicines. And are those challenges, I'm sure, also evolving? Perhaps they were more challenging in the past. We obviously the field has made so many strides now. So what types of challenges are still there?
There's certainly some administrative challenges. So we're working on drugs that are characterized as Schedule I controlled substances. That carries a pretty significant administrative burden. I mean, most of the times when drug needs to be shipped to a site, you just call your depot and ask them to, or submit a form to the depot, and they ship the drug to the clinical site, and they're able to move very quickly. We have to go through things like state and federal DEA and local controlled substance approvals. When we ship drug across international lines, it adds the additional layer of complexity, and that's all already on top of the already extremely rigorous and thorough process of FDA review and IRB reviews. And so there's certainly some administrative complexities with navigating research in these drugs. I can never talk about this without singing the praises of our clinical team and our R&D team generally, who have, I think, are set the standard in the field for how efficiently they can navigate that. And so we've been able to really progress like we would with any other development program and navigate any of those hurdles very quickly and efficiently over the past several years. But there's certainly challenges as the field has evolved and as more clinical sites and investigators have dedicated their time and resources to conducting trials in this class. We've seen an easier ability to go to sites in a number of locations and a wider set of delivery sites. So we continue to see progress, and the enthusiasm from providers and researchers is palpable. When we go out to sites, in many instances, not only do they want to work on this drug class, but they're especially excited to be working with our team and on our drug and in our program. So we're honored to have that kind of relationship with the broader research ecosystem, and want to keep leveraging that as we go forward in our pivotal trials.
And I think we did talk about this before, but those stigmas that may have been associated with things like psychedelic compounds, I think those are definitely, now that the science is here to back their use and their biology. And I think definitely we're seeing a huge shift in this space.
Absolutely. I think it's, it's often the context that dictates how people generally perceive things. I think when we sort of zoom out and we look at various other areas of medicine and psychiatry in particular, right? We look at the whole class of psychostimulants, which are largely delivered to pediatric populations. So these are amphetamines given to children who have ADHD so that they can largely go to school and be effective in some everyday occupations. At face, that's somewhat of a wild idea to give children amphetamines, but certainly the science has proven out, and there's a number of people who have benefited tremendously from that. So when we zoom out and look at it that way, when we look at drugs like sodium oxybate, Jazz's product for narcolepsy, and again, these drugs, historically, many commentators would say, well, that's not possible, it can't be done, or it's going to face some challenge and it will never be viable. There will always be naysayers, but we certainly believe this is yet another product where the science will carry the day, and we'll ultimately, if we are able to prove out and replicate what we did in phase two, we'll have a product that can really get out to the world at a massive scale and help many, many people.
And so what are some of the short and long-term goals at MindMed? And also, is MM120 being evaluated in other indications in addition to GAD?
We haven't currently announced plans to study MM120 in other indications. We have a research collaboration with a group in Switzerland who's done research on LSD and anxiety disorders and depression, other ongoing studies in various other disorders. We have talked fairly extensively about the findings we saw in our phase two study. So it was a GAD population, but there's a high degree of overlap, both in terms of the construct of GAD and the rating of GAD symptoms and major depressive disorder. Anxiety and depression symptoms are significantly overlapping, and the scales that we use to measure them have a high degree of construct overlap, meaning that you almost can't measure one without picking up some of the other. And so we saw in our study that in many instances, on average, patients had depression symptoms. So we use a thing called the MADRS, a scale called the MADRS, to measure these symptoms. And while lower than the typical threshold for a major depressive disorder study, we saw that there was some MDD symptomatology there. And over the course of the 12 weeks, we also saw this rapid and sustained, statistically significant reduction in those symptoms that really outpaced almost anything we've seen to date. And some of the other drugs that are being developed for MDD, the magnitude of response we observed was even better there. So we're actively exploring and engaging in work to explore these other potential indications and think about how broadly these drugs could ultimately be hopefully labeled for, if FDA, if we're fortunate enough to get an FDA label for these products. And if so, and we have a label in things like anxiety and depression and perhaps other indications, it would open up the opportunity even further. And to the other part of your question, I think that really, acutely our goal is to launch our phase three program. That's sort of an all hands company wide endeavor this year. Is we have been setting the pace and the standard for efficiency in developing this drug class, and we want to continue that and set the standard for how quickly we can transition into a pivotal phase three program. Longer term, it's to bring our products to patients and to get an FDA approval, and ultimately to develop them, not just to an approval, but to an approval that is scalable in a commercial setting. Our longest and highest aspiration here is to get the products to market and to have them accessible by as wide of a population as could benefit from them. And I think when we look at some of the historical approaches that have been taken and various aspects of the development program that can limit access. Our view from day one is that we want to develop a product that can, roughly 20 million people who would have GAD symptoms, we want to have a meaningful impact on that population. In order to do that, we have to really think big and pursue a label and a development strategy that would allow these products to get out to those patients at scale.
Indeed. Rob, thank you so much for being on the show today. I greatly appreciate your time and for the very insightful discussion. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's the end of this episode of the X-Talks Life Science Podcast. If you liked today's show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next week. Bye for now.
To join the X-Talks community, visit xtalks.com and register for exclusive access to curated content like live webinars, news articles, and educational videos. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers sharing them and should not be taken as professional advice, nor do they necessarily reflect the policy or position of Honeycomb Worldwide. For further information, email us at podcast@xtalks.com.